This Janet Mefford Today podcast is sponsored by Liberty HealthShare. Liberty HealthShare is a nonprofit healthcare sharing ministry that allows you to control and manage your own healthcare and choose any doctor or hospital in the nation. If you're a freedom-loving American looking for contract-free healthcare, call now 855-585-4237 or go to libertyhealthshare.org.
This is Janet Mefford Today.
Our confidence is in Christ alone.
Are we going to stand with God, come what may?
If the Word of God says it, I believe it.
And that's the way it is.
And now, here is Janet Mefford.
Welcome, everybody. Well, he said he was going to do it, and he did it. President Trump has now signed an executive order linking free speech efforts at public universities to federal grants. And this is all about an effort to combat the free speech crackdown on too many American college campuses. According to Reuters, the order requires that schools ensure they allow students to express themselves in order to receive funds from 12 federal agencies that help fund universities and colleges. Now, I thought this was kind of interesting. The president gathered and did a press conference and an announcement about his executive order. And with him were a number of students who have been the victims of this free speech crackdown on American college university campuses. And I thought this was really good stuff. I wanted to play some of this for you. First, here's the president outlining why he believes the executive order is necessary.
In America, the very heart of the university's mission is preparing students for life as citizens in a free society. But even as universities have received billions and billions of dollars from taxpayers, many have become increasingly hostile to free speech and to the First Amendment. You see it all the time. You turn on the news and you see things that are horrible. You see people being punched hard in the face. But he didn't go down. I said, you have a better chin than Muhammad Ali, and he had a better chin. And you see the cowbell scene. You saw that horrible scene. That was a disgraceful thing at a school, at a university. Under the guise of speech codes and safe spaces and trigger warnings, these universities have tried to restrict free thought, impose total conformity, and shut down the voices of great young Americans like those here today. It's great people. All of that change is starting right now. We're dealing with billions and billions and billions of dollars.
It reminds me of Carl Sagan, doesn't it? Billions and billions. He's probably doing that on purpose. But boy, I mean, this is good. It's really, even if it's just leadership and a demonstration of support, and it really doesn't have as much teeth as a lot of people would hope it would, he's still the president of the United States. He's still standing up and saying, we will stand for free speech in this country. And that's always good to see. Here he elaborates on his action. This is cut two.
Taxpayer dollars should not subsidize anti-First Amendment institutions. And that's exactly what they are, anti-First Amendment. Universities that want taxpayer dollars should promote free speech, not silence free speech. Today's groundbreaking action is the first in a series of steps we will take to defend students' rights. We are proudly joined by several young Americans who can speak directly about ideological intolerance on campus.
Very good. President Trump also introduced some of these students whose free speech was shut down on their college campuses. And I think in this particular cut, it reveals why so many Christians back him. Listen to cut three.
Also here with us today is Polly Olson, a student at Northeast Wisconsin Technical College. Last year, Polly was handing out homemade Valentine's Day cards with messages such as, you are special and Jesus loves you. College officials stopped her and told her that she would be restricted to so-called free speech zone because some people might find her cards offensive. I don't. I love that card. In fact, Polly, give me some. I'll send them around to my friends.
See, isn't that good? It's so good. After 8 years of Obama, that's so good to hear. So let me listen here and play for you some of what Polly Olson had to say, because I thought this young woman was very poised and said it very well and expressed herself and her situation at her college very well. Let's listen to her. Cut four.
Freedom of speech is near and dear to my heart. My mother told me while she was homeschooling me that I would need to know what my First Amendment rights were, because someday they would be violated and I would have to stand up for them. So I'm carrying on her legacy of handing out these little Valentines, encouraging people to know that they are loved and cared for. And within 15 minutes of setting foot on my campus this past year, I was told that I was soliciting in disrupting the learning environment, and that it would not be tolerated, and that I would have to stop handing out my Valentines. And I contacted some friends of mine, and they sent me to Will to have legal counsel, because this wasn't the first time the school had done it to me. They had stopped me a few months after my mom died, and told me that I was not allowed to do it then. So I went through months of trying to get them to change this policy that they were enforcing. And they told me that they would do it. Well, that was 5 years ago. So now it was time to take action and make them follow through with what they were telling me that they were going to do, trying to shut me up.
I mean, can you imagine over something so innocuous? Is it that threatening to you that a young woman would hand out Valentine's that says Jesus loves you? Really? That's worthy of marginalizing her and trying to shut her up and cracking down on her to some extent? It seems to me so useless and so pointless. And then she went on a little bit talking about the importance of free speech, and I think she did a great job. This is Cut 5.
I'm just one of many students that are out there that universities and schools are trying to shut down, sweep it under the rug, and make them be quiet. And I told them, I'm not going to be quiet this time. I'm going to talk to anyone and everyone I can about our freedom of speech in this country, because it's really the core of America's freedom. And without freedom of speech, we don't have America anymore. And so I challenge America to learn to love one another as Christ did on the cross for each one of us, and that speak your differences. It's okay. We are in a country of freedom. And really, that's what's important, is to embrace the diversity that we have here, because that's what made America great in the first place.
It's good to allow these young women and men to stand up and say what needs to be said from their perspective. And I'm really glad that President Trump gave them the opportunity. And I'm really glad that he was willing to issue the executive order. Now, it was kind of interesting. There was a piece over at The Federalist, which I found to be quite disturbing, along these same lines. Justin McClinton is on The Federalist writing this piece, and he was talking about his experience in the University of California's newly formed Free Speech Center in Washington, D.C. He was accepted to be part of the center's group of 10 inaugural research fellows, and they were assigned year-long free speech-based research projects on each of the 9 campuses within the University of California system, and he did research on free speech at the Berkeley campus. Yeah, you can tell how this is going to turn out. He said he wanted to do his research project on how the campus administrators at Berkeley reacted to the aftermath of the Milo Yiannopoulos riots in 2017, and it just didn't go that well. He said he got pushback from his handlers at Berkeley, but then things got a little bit better, and then he started getting emails from the center marginalizing the importance of his campus visit. He sorted out the project. He's going through all the details here. But then he says, as he progressed through the year of his fellowship, it became increasingly clear that the intellectual work he and the other fellows were tasked to produce had become marginal to the center's true goals. There will be no opportunity for us to present our work at today's conference in D.C., he says, so the whole ordeal will just serve as publicity for the center and its star-studded advisory board. The only opportunity to present our intellectual work from the year-long fellowship is a nebulous conference publication. And then he talks about, after a year of time and effort, the representatives from his center decided to wait until the very last minute to send him a passive-aggressive email informing him he would be the only free speech fellow whose work would not be featured in their campus conference publication. So it's just window dressing. We'll just throw this conservative on our free speech center inaugural fellows lineup, and then we'll just, you know, treat him however we want. And he was a little bit more pessimistic, I would say, but he did say he was glad and it was refreshing that President Trump is calling attention to the issues dealing with free speech on campus by threatening to withhold federal funding. Hey, every little bit helps, right? We're going to come back. You're listening to Janet Mefford today. We'll return right after this break. This is Janet Mefford, here to tell you that preborn saves lives.
But he was like, you're not ready for another baby. And at that moment, I felt that I'm not going to be able to be a mom to this baby. So I came to the pregnancy clinic. She said they go to heartbeat. That changed my life just from that ultrasound picture.
The Ministry of Preborn supports young moms in crisis with love and support and free ultrasounds. Because when a woman sees her baby on ultrasound, she's more likely to choose life. In fact, 8 out of 10 women will choose life when they see their babies on ultrasound. Would you please join Preborn in the cause for life? For $140, you can sponsor 5 ultrasounds. All gifts are tax deductible, and 100% of your sponsorship goes to saving babies. To donate, call 855-402-BABY. That's 855-402-BABY. 402-2229, 855-402-BABY, or there's a banner to click at janetmefford.com. Your love can save a life.
Many people in developing nations have no access to desperately needed medical care. That's why Mercy Ships brings volunteers aboard our hospital ship, the Africa Mercy, to give the world's forgotten poor the free medical care they need. We have an immediate need for registered nurses, especially with a pediatric specialty. As a volunteer nurse, you won't just give life-altering health care. You'll receive so much in return.
It's an amazingly rewarding experience.
You'll give hope and make a difference in the lives of those who have virtually no access to medical aid.
It's such a fantastic thing to do. Everybody who I've met on this ship either wants to come back and do it again, or they're already here for the second, third, or tenth time.
So what are you waiting for? Show mercy to someone today.
I would say go for it.
Get more information and learn how to apply by visiting mercyships.org/nurses. That's mercyships.org/nurses.
This is Janet Mefford today. Welcome back. Michigan officials recently announced a policy directive to target groups in that state that the Southern Poverty Law Center has deemed to be hate groups. Of course, the SPLC itself is a hate group that regularly targets and smears conservatives and Christian organizations that it finds to be politically offensive. Well, now the American Freedom Law Center is fighting back against this directive, which has resulted in a new hate crimes unit. They have filed a federal civil rights lawsuit against the Attorney General of Michigan and the director of the Michigan Department of Civil Rights. Joining us now to talk about it is the co-founder of the American Freedom Law Center, Robert Muse. Robert, welcome. Thank you so much for being with us. How are you?
I'm doing great, Janet. Thanks for having me again.
Oh, great to talk to you. You have said the newly announced policy directive of Michigan's Attorney General and Department of Civil Rights Director should be dubbed the Crime Speak Policy, which I think is a great way of describing it. But explain to people why that is.
Well, it takes the page right of George Orwell's famous 1984, where it was you had the thought police who were prosecuting people for their thoughts and for their speech, not for engaging in any criminal activity. And that's exactly what this is. This is a very much an Orwellian witch hunt. That's in the Michigan Attorney General, who is a radical left wing progressive, is now weaponizing the Attorney General's office to go after organizations that the Southern Poverty Law Center of all organizations identify as so-called hate groups. Yeah. Well, when you go to the Southern Poverty Law Center's so-called hate map for Michigan, it lists 31 groups, and the first group listed is the American Freedom Law Center. Now, in their public announcement of this policy, they posted up a press release on the Michigan Attorney General's the Michigan government website. They hyperlinked to the Southern Poverty Law Center's so-called intelligence report and to their hate map, which, you know, as I mentioned, the American Freedom Law Center is all over it. Yeah. And the Southern Poverty Law Center does what, you know, the left wing has been doing for time immemorial, and it seems like they're doing it even more so now, is they want to marginalize political opponents by attaching labels such as hate groups. Now, it's one thing for the Southern Poverty Law Center, again, a left-wing organization, to engage in political hyperbole and political propaganda to try to demonize, you know, their political opponents. But now when you have an attorney general who's an official of the government using government resources to now target organizations such as my law firm, a legitimate 501c3 organization defending the civil rights of conservative Christians and Jews, and that's probably why we're on their list, because right. we're successful, right. for her to identify us and name us as part of this hate crimes unit target is, I mean, that's Orwellian. This is the Michigan Thought Police. And once, when you go from a private organization, again, using political propaganda, to now a government dedicating resources, investigatory resources, the top law enforcement officer in the state targeting us, now our constitutional rights have been triggered. And that's why we filed the federal lawsuit.
No, I'm so glad that you did. And this is what is really infuriating, because the SPLC has done this to so many legitimate, excellent organizations like yours across the country. And we've seen this trend now of fighting back against the SPLC. You have groups, you know, that have now filed suit against the SPLC. What about that? Is it also necessary, would you think, to file suit against the SPLC in addition to some of these Michigan officials? Or how do you see that?
Well, again, you know, it's one thing for a private organization to engage in what is their, you know, political speech to attack us. From our perspective, when they've gone to the next step, and now you have government who's using their resources and relying on the Southern Poverty Law Center to come after us, now our constitutional rights have been triggered. Now, certainly, there's been a lot of people that go after the Southern Poverty Law Center, and we fully support everything they're doing. But and this goes to one of the other problems with what the Attorney General is doing. If you look at all the Southern Poverty Law Center reports that identify, you know, the American Freedom Law Center as a so-called hate group, first of all, what is a hate group? I mean, that's just a political label, right, that they use to marginalize you. But there's not one statement in any one of these reports that identifies anything that we've done as being criminal. All they do is they object to the civil rights litigation that we filed, and in fact, here's one example. The key moment of hate where they identified us for last year in 2018 in this newest report that they just released was our filing of an amicus brief on behalf of several national security experts in the U.S. Supreme Court in support of President Trump's so-called travel ban, which, by the way, the Supreme Court upheld as a proper exercise of executive power. So that's what they – so this name-calling stuff is just name-calling. But when the name-calling stuff becomes now – makes you now a target of investigation, surveillance, and the creation of this database of so-called hate groups across the country, across the state of Michigan, that's very Orwellian. It's designed to not only chill our rights, but also, you know, think about what this is going to do for potential clients who might reach out to us for legal work, or donors who want to support our work as a charitable organization. It's like, oh, these guys are identified by the Attorney General as a criminal organization.
Yeah.
So that's where the problem comes.
Yeah, no, that's horrible. Yeah, I was going to ask you that. What is your alleged hate crime? I mean, you know, you think about
There are none.
Yeah, there are none. I mean, you think about groups like, you know, truly extremist groups of which there are very, very few relative to the ones they're calling hate groups that are legitimate organizations that they just don't agree with politically. But have you heard anything from these Michigan politicians, these bureaucrats at all, about doing something to you? Have they called you? Have they contacted you to investigate you or anything along those lines?
Again, we're trying to send this at its very beginning. She just announced this policy directive on the 22nd of February of this year, and then we filed our lawsuit on February 28th.
Good.
And again, in the policy directive, she specifically relies on the SPLC hate map, which has us listed as number one. So she's already rung that bell in terms of disseminating false information and giving it the government imprimatur, right? Again, it's one thing for SPLC to do it, but to have the government now give its official endorsement of this nonsense and to make it known publicly, she's already harmed us in a sense that that bell's already been rung. And, you know, and this, and she's doubled down on this. even after we file the lawsuit and make the point that, look, we're a legitimate organization engaging in legitimate activities that are all protected by the First Amendment, the Southern Poverty Law Center, anyone to rely on that is absolutely reckless because it's illegitimate what they're doing. And yet the Detroit News did a story on this. And shortly after the Detroit News story came out, Nessel, the Michigan Attorney General, posted on her Facebook a link to that story. And this is what she said. And this shows how biased she is. And she's a law enforcement officer. She's supposed to be, of all the people, she's supposed to be objective and unbiased. She said, quote, only in Trump's America do you get sued for pledging to prosecute hate crimes and pursue organizations that engage in illegal conduct against minority communities. I'll never back down on my commitment to protect the safety of all Michiganders. Bring it, end quote. And I responded, well, Attorney General, we are bringing it. But here, look, only in Trump's America, this is an attorney general. She's supposed to be unbiased and objective. She's not. And knowing that what the lawsuit's about, linking to it, and the fact that we are a legitimate organization, she goes on in this really directly referring to us as organizations engaging in illegal conduct against minority communities. This is appalling activity by our attorney general. And she's weaponizing the attorney general's office, and we intend to stop it through our federal lawsuit.
No, I'm really glad you're doing this. Can you talk a little bit about the claims that you've brought against these politicians, the specific violations, the violations of your constitutional rights in weaponizing this SPLC report against groups like yours?
Right. It's just two government agencies here in Michigan. One is the Attorney General's office, obviously, and then the other one is the Michigan Department of Civil Rights, of all things, right? They joined in on this thing as well, and they're one of the ones that are going to keep the database. And very interesting, in the press release where they did this joint announcement that they're going to go after groups such as the American Freedom Law Center, one of the examples that the director of the Michigan Department of Civil Rights used as an example of something that they're going to collect data on and keep this official government database on was that there was this pro-patriot group that handed out literature during President's Day up in Lansing. Like, that's a constitutionally protected activity.
Yeah.
But, I mean, these things are just warning shots, right, across the bows. Like, we're watching you. Big Brother is watching you. That's why I refer back to the George Orwell thought police.
Sure.
But the claims, we brought three claims specifically. One is the right to freedom of speech, because everything that we've engaged in that is now making us a target of this government's really disfavored treatment is all protected by the First Amendment. Our civil rights litigation, all the public policy things that we do is all protected speech. Secondly, is under the First Amendment, we have a right to expressive association. And they're harming that by, again, chilling donors who would want to give to us, to clients who might want to work with us, and just to disseminating this information, false information, and giving the government endorsement of false information that we are somehow a criminal organization is violating that. And then equal protection, because we're now the target of the government because of the viewpoint we express on political issues. So those are the three main claims. And we're seeking what's called prospective relief, meaning we want a court to say that this is unlawful, what they're doing, and to stop it, particularly as applied to us, and also to remove of this, you know, public dissemination of falsehoods where the government is giving the endorsement to against the American Freedom Law Center, because it's harming our interests.
Well, I'm really glad that you guys are doing this. I've had enough of the Southern Poverty Law Center, and I think I speak for a lot of conservatives and Christians when I say that. So God bless you. Robert Muse from the American Freedom Law Center. Keep up the good work, Robert, and thanks a lot for being here. This hour of Janet Mefford Today is brought to you by Preborn. For your gift of $140, you can provide 5 free ultrasound sessions reaching 5 women with the message of life at the pregnancy center supported by Preborn. It's a wonderful way to save the life of a preborn baby and also reach her mother with the gospel of Jesus Christ. All you have to do is call now, 855-402-BABY. That number again is 855-402-BABY, 855-402-2229, where there is a banner to click at janetmefford.com. We'll be right back. Stay with us. This Janet Mefford Today podcast is sponsored by Liberty HealthShare. Liberty HealthShare is a nonprofit healthcare sharing ministry that allows you to control and manage your own healthcare and choose any doctor or hospital in the nation. If you're a freedom-loving American looking for contract-free healthcare, call now 855-585-4237 or go to libertyhealthshare.org. We are back on Janet Mefford Today. Well, French revolutionary Maximilien Robespierre, one of the principal architects of the Reign of Terror, once had this to say: the secret of freedom lies in educating people, whereas the secret of tyranny is in keeping them ignorant. This is a quote I think should be widely disseminated in America today, because we are increasingly a gullible and uninformed people when it comes to matters that affect all of our lives. Is there any way out of this kind of ignorance? We're going to talk about it today with Tanner Roberts, author of Dumb Politics, The Political Rhetoric and Blissful Ignorance of a Generation. Tanner, great to have you here. So good to have you, and thank you for joining us.
Hi, Janet. Thank you for having me. That was very well said.
Well, I can't take credit for the quote, but I thought it kind of fit the theme of your book. You know,
I like it. I wish I included that in my book.
Well, feel free. You know, you can't go wrong with the French revolutionary leaders when it comes to tyranny and ignorance. But, you know, this is really interesting, because you say all this stuff about dumb politics is really fostering, I should say, a generation of high dependency. They're making the younger generation more susceptible to dumb politics in general by what's going on. How do you see the broad picture right now when it comes to dumb politics? How would you characterize it?
Yeah, good question, Janet. And the reason, you know, the subtitle of my book is The Political Rhetoric and Blissful Ignorance of a Generation. I don't specifically say my generation, and I'm 28 years old, so I'm part of the millennial generation. But the way it's shaping out is what I call in my book acceptable dependency. It's when you have, you know, older generations kind of fostering that entitlement of the younger generations. So when you have, you know, kids my age that are living at home with their parents at one of the highest rates in history, you know, who do you blame for that?
Right.
Do you blame the parents, or do you blame the kids? And I think it's a little bit of a mixture of both, because you are having parents nurture that dependability or dependency, and kids accepting that. So when you have politicians like, you know, politicians that grew up in the New Left era, Bernie Sanders, Maxine Waters,
right,
all those people saying that, you know, everybody deserves this. They have a right to that. Whatever it is, they are nurturing that dependency.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, kind of where my book stems, Dumb Politics. And that's kind of where that ignorance comes from.
Yeah. Well, now it's been said about people like Sanders and Pelosi and the people on the left that the reason they want to foster dependency is to secure their own power, that the more you increase the size and the scope of the federal government, the more you make people dependent on government, the more secure they will be in those positions. And so it benefits them. But that doesn't really clear up the problem of why you have people who are not in politics fostering dependency of younger generations. So how would you look at that problem where you do, and it's true, I completely agree with you, you have older generations that are fostering this dependency. What do you think is driving that, though? What do you think is going on?
You know, you spoke to it on the political side. It's definitely about a grab for power. You know, for those not in politics, you know, it's hard to pinpoint it. Because some people do like that dependency on them. They feed off of that when somebody is that reliant on somebody. My parents were not that way. They tried to get me out of the house as fast as possible. And I certainly respect them for that, because it's certainly something I will do as well. But I think one of the biggest problems, too, we have, not just in politics, but with a generation, I think it's really stemmed down from politics, and it's also stemmed down for culture, is that we have completely mistaken empathy for envy.
Yeah,
you know,
true.
We think these things are empathetic, but really they're just envious of what other people have, what life I don't have that I want, but I have the means to achieve it. I just rather depend on somebody else to get it for me.
Yeah.
So I think that's one of the root causes one of the root problems, too, is mistaken empathy for envy.
Yeah, I agree with you there. So, for example, when we see these proposals for free college for all, and those of us who've already been through college are rolling our eyes and saying, there's no such thing as a free lunch. It's not like you're just going to get free college. The money will be printed out of the mint and it's just been delivered to you in a gigantic Brinks truck. I mean, somebody else is going to be paying for that. But the generations that are younger who are enamored, for example, with socialism and socialistic type policies and this new, as if it's a new thing when it's really an old thing that never works. How do you address to a younger generation, hey, the free stuff that you really want may not be the best thing for you or for anybody else in terms of the price we would pay as a society if we went down that road?
You know, that's exactly right, too. And you spoke about it, you know, every generation thinks they're onto something revolutionary.
Yes.
But it's nothing, you know, it's revolutionary in the sense that they're assimilating with the masses of today, yesterday, and the future. It's going to be the same kind of revolutions that we've already gone through and been through. We saw it in the 1960s with a new left, you know, that did bring about some good things, but a lot of those things are systemic problems today. But you know, it's really about educating people, and like you said, nothing's a free lunch. And when you have that basic ignorance of economics, those things all sound great on paper. And those are things that want to get pushed. And again, that's the mistaken envy for empathy. By pushing those ideas and our generation becoming more susceptible to them.
Well, that's right.
Yeah, and so, you know, it really comes down to education, actually getting out of your bubble, because you see what we're inundated with every day. It comes in through academics. It comes in through media, through Hollywood, through music, through everything. People are just blasted with it every day.
Yep.
And we've really lost our moral sensibility amidst all of that.
Yes.
So it's really hard, you know, for generations to go through all that and think, oh, there's nothing wrong with my demand set and people having to meet my demand, because that moral obligation has been completely lost.
Right. Do you think there has been a movement away from understanding what our rights are as the founders understood them, as opposed to what we are now hearing all the time is our rights? It seems that the definition of rights keeps expanding on the left. Now you have a right to health care, you have a right to a college education, a right. What do you make of that trend where we're now hearing that certain things are rights that the founders never would have called rights?
I know. That's a great question. You have a right to work hard yourself, to make something out of yourself, and go after the things that you want.
Right.
Nobody's going to give that to you. And I think that's another person's right is, well, no, we don't have to give that to you. That's not something we have to do. That is an actual right. That is an actual freedom, is being able to determine what is best for yourself. And you know, people, they unfortunately look to government for prosperity. Government cannot make you prosperous.
Right.
You know,
yes.
They can only clear the way for prosperity.
Yes.
And I definitely tell a lot of people, you know, we give credit to, you know, whether it's Trump administration, whatever the administration is, for booming economies, things of that nature. The government doesn't actually do that in a sense that they make policy to help booster people out of poverty, to get people in jobs, to get them off of food stamps. They get out of the way. That's what they do. So they can get credit in the sense that they, you know, remove the barriers to that specific thing. So, you know, government cannot be your salvation for all. Only you can. You know, you can be the self-determination in your life to make those things happen. So nobody's going to give you anything, even if you come, you know, just keep repeating that it is my right, it's my right, I deserve it. That's just not going to happen for you. And the quicker you realize that, the quicker you'll be able to learn that self-determination is the only way to go.
Well, and what's so interesting about that, and I want to get into this a little bit more on the subject of individualism versus collectivism, because that's a big theme in your book. If you don't understand why self-determination was actually key and individual liberty was key to the success of this country, then you may not connect the dots on how self-determination is actually in your own best interest, as you are the latest generation having to go to work and having to make a life and a family in your way in society. We're going to pick up on this conversation with Tanner Roberts when we come back. The name of his book, Dumb Politics. You're listening to Janet Mefford Today. Stay with us. This is Janet Mefford, here to tell you that preborn saves lives.
But he was like, you're not ready for another baby. And at that moment, I felt that I'm not going to be able to be a mom to this baby. So I came to the pregnancy clinic. She said they got a heartbeat. That changed my life just from that ultrasound picture.
The Ministry of Preborn supports young moms in crisis with love and support and free ultrasounds. Because when a woman sees her baby on ultrasound, she's more likely to choose life. In fact, 8 out of 10 women will choose life when they see their babies on ultrasound. Would you please join Preborn in the cause for life? For $140, you can sponsor 5 ultrasounds. All gifts are tax deductible, and 100% of your sponsorship goes to saving babies. To donate, call 855-402-BABY. That's 855-402-BABY. 402-2229, 855-402-BABY, or there's a banner to click at janetmefford.com. Your love can save a life. I like to read, and whenever I can, I like to read the Puritans. John Gerstner once said that the Puritans constituted the greatest movement in the church since the days of the apostles. That's quite an endorsement. I'd like to recommend a publisher committed to the writings of these godly men. It's called Northampton Press. Men such as Jonathan Edwards, Thomas Watson, Jeremiah Burroughs, and John Bunyan are just a few of the great preachers they've put back into print for us. Many of these titles have not been available since the 1600s, but now they are in print. These books have been retypeset, slightly updated for modern readers, and printed in such a way as to last hundreds of years. I can personally recommend them to you, having read many of them myself. Mention Janet Mefford in the comment section of the order form and receive a free copy of the book Law and Liberty, A Biblical Look at Legalism with any purchase. For more information, visit their website at northamptonpress.org. And remember, it's N-O-R-T, hamptonpress.org. We are back on Janet Mefford Today. My guest is Tanner Roberts, author of the book Dumb Politics, The Political Rhetoric and Blissful Ignorance of a Generation. And we were discussing some of these things that we're seeing in society all around us, this kind of acceptable dependency that's been fostered, and how we see really this problem all around us, the younger generation more susceptible to these ideas that are put out there about promoting policies and ideas that subsidize groups at the expense of others. And this is what you say dumb politics is. Tanner, that it really is the act of promoting policies and ideas that subsidize groups at the expense of others. What would you say are some of the most glaring examples that you see right now of that kind of dumb politics?
Well, you know, I can think of one immediately being the minimum wage, right? Because everybody thinks, especially younger generations that are making minimum wage, they see a $15 hike in minimum wage. Well, that's a great thing. They don't see the unintended consequences with that. They don't see parties B and C that are getting affected as well. So when you've got businesses that are forced to pay more, they're ending up having to cut hours, to cut people, or even worse, completely close up shop. I provide many examples, especially in the states of Washington and California, where these things are already taking place. You know, they minimum wage is really a difference of where you're at in your age, where you're at in your working career. That's all it is. I mean, I understand there are people out there making a minimum wage that are older, but the majority are just a difference in age. And if I tell you that I make $300 an hour, you might say, oh, that's amazing. Yeah, but I only work 1 hour a week. And then suddenly that becomes, oh, that's terrible. So, you know, it's those kind of policies where it sounds good, more money for more people, yeah, that's great, but you're not seeing the effects that it has on business owners, small businesses, people closing up shop, and people trying to make more by working more.
No, that's completely true. And that example is perfect. It drives me crazy to think about it, because not only does it drive these small businesses out of business, as you've mentioned in many cases, but what really drives it, I think, is this idea that I deserve it. I shouldn't have to work for a low wage. I'm better than that. They should be better to me. And we're losing this idea that, you know, for generations, we had people working three jobs to feed their families. I'm not saying that that was an ideal thing. It wasn't. But you had people coming over here from all over the world to have that chance to better themselves, to achieve the American dream. If you start out saying, you owe me as much as I want for this low-end job, it's negating not only the self-determination angle, but it's negating the idea that certain jobs are only worth so much economically. I mean, it's like it's just ignored. I deserve it. You know, it's like L'Oreal, you know, I'm worth it. Pay me $15. Well, you're not going to have a job after a few months if you're going to drive your business out under. I mean, it economically, it doesn't make any sense.
Absolutely, Jane. And more so, you know, I don't understand the justification of getting paid more without additional output.
Yes.
Those are things that companies look at. If you're more valuable, I'll definitely get that that pay raise that you want. But without any additional output, there's no justification for doing that. And the cherry on top of that is calling it a living wage, as if you support something different. I guess you're supporting a death wage. I'm not sure what that means. It's those kind of,
that's true.
You know, those kind of labels that make it dumb politics.
Yes, right. Well, it should give you an incentive with our kids working minimum wage jobs. We always tell them this is, you know, you need to experience this because it will make you work hard in life and you want to move up. You want to be able to do better and better as you get older. It's kind of an incentive. Yeah, I don't get that at all, other than the fact that it's politically popular in some circles, even if it's a big failure. What about some of these dumb politics that you talk about in particular, Tanner? You talk about, for example, I like this, dumb name calling, where you have these pejoratives thrown around. How do you see the name calling fitting into the bigger problem of dumb politics?
Well, the biggest problem with name calling is it becomes character assassination, right? So when you label somebody with hateful terms, you're slandering them. You're assassinating their character and you're creating doubt in people's mind. That's one of the biggest consequences to name calling. You know, we've kind of gotten rid of, and I'm not saying it's good, but the word stereotype has completely died. So people might stereotype. That happens. It happens every day, whether you like it or not. I talk about an example in my book. You know, on the way to work this morning, I was driving behind somebody that was going about 40 miles per hour on the freeway, very dangerous. And
yes.
I can't help it, but the first thought in my mind is this person is probably an older person, somebody that's elderly.
Yes.
And I drive past and I confirm my stereotype.
Right.
Now, was that wrong of me? Does that make me an ageist? I don't know.
No.
You know, we
just
don't have
a good
to go
guesser.
To the...
You're a good guesser is
yeah,
what you are.
Right. Yeah. And so, you know, you see those kind of things and people may stereotype and they could be very negative stereotypes, but they don't mean their counterparts, their extreme counterparts, their sexism, racism, you know, all those kind of different things that people associate, you know, maybe basic things. You know, Hollywood uses stereotypes all the time to make easy, quick punchline jokes.
Yes.
But they don't get chastised for it. But I don't like the extremeness that we've gone to character assassinate people, especially at high levels of government when they're succeeding or anything like that, going back through old Twitter posts to see if they can catch them in something.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's right. That's right. It's silly. Going back a little bit to what we were talking about before with the minimum wage, you have also a section in your book on dumb economics. And, you know, we've been talking quite a bit recently about the Green New Deal and Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. And people say this is just socialism. It's not going to work. You can't possibly make this work and all the rest. But what do you think of these kinds of proposals that are just socialist proposals? They're very utopian in nature, but they appeal to a lot of especially younger, you know, generation members who never really remember the Cold War.
You know, it's a very hard concept for a lot of the younger generations to get their mind wrapped around. You know, I went to Texas A&M. I graduated from economics, and they certainly had a Keynesian focus on economics rather than a free market principle that they taught. And one of the things that are that's so hard for people to wrap their heads around is that we have the ability to lower taxes and actually make more government revenue. We actually saw that with the Trump tax cuts.
Yep.
Now, unfortunately, the spending was still out of control.
Right.
So when you lower or when you raise government revenue, it really doesn't do anybody any good if that justifies more spending. But people don't realize that cutting taxes, things of that nature, actually helps increase revenue if you're really worried about getting more revenue to the government.
Sure.
That's one of the methods to do that. You know, I give the example of the Laffer curve. That was a subject taught about 2 minutes in one of my classes at Texas A&M, which Texas A&M is supposed to be a very conservative school. The student body is, the faculty not so much.
Yes.
But, you know, it's those basic principles that people have a hard time wrapping around because their solution to all these big spending, you know, proposals is just to tax more. And, you know, we have billionaires out there that we can tax. We have all these rich people that we can tax. We have the top 10%. Well, the top 10% is making about $200,000 per household. That's each couple contribute, or each person married contributing to that household. That's not a lot of money.
Mm-hmm.
And you really have to break down those aspects to it and just realize that, you know, socialism only goes so far. As long as you have other people money to take. Once that's run out, then you've got Venezuela, basically.
Right, exactly. Well, and it must drive you a little bit crazy since you understand economics to see what so many people are falling for, doesn't it? I mean, do you look at these people and say, get some basic education on how it all works?
Oh, it's very frustrating. You know, that was one of the biggest reasons I wrote my book is because a lot of our generation is really just buying into what's on TV. They're not really reading anymore, especially when it comes to nonfiction. That's why I kept my book very short, to the point, and I try to put a little entertainment in there too as well. Because, yeah, you can get frustrated all day long, but you got to help at least, you know, spread some kind of education out there. Spread a different point of view because they're not getting it. They're not getting it in the classroom. They're not getting it on TV. They're not getting it anywhere else. So that frustration really just you need to foster that and just help educate people, whether they agree with you or not. I don't think everybody's going to agree with me on everything in my book. I certainly hope not. I don't want to live in a world where everybody agrees with each other. But it's just getting that different perspective, and that was really one of the biggest inspirations for me to write this book at my time in life.
Well, I think it's terrific, and I think you're going to give a lot of hope to a lot of people across the generations, including those older than you who say, all right, that's good. We have millennials who get it. There's hope for America. Well, the name of the book is Dumb Politics, The Political Rhetoric and Blissful Ignorance of a Generation by Tanner Roberts. So good to have you here, Tanner. Really appreciate your being with us.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Janet. I really enjoyed it.
Well, I did too. God bless you. Thanks again. Again, the name of the book, Dumb Politics. And we thank you so much for tuning in to Janet Mefford today. We'll see you next time.